Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Comes this one step. On my altar at home, I have images of loved ones and even a tuft of fur from my recently departed Zara dog. And right here in the Zendo, we can see the ashes of our founder swirled into a glass globe on the altar. I remember listening to IMS teacher Gil Fronsdal describing the collection of photos on his personal altar of loved ones some 20 odd years ago during the Iraq War. And included among them was a picture of the late Dick Cheney, widely considered to be responsible for the deaths of many thousands in that war. His photo was included as a reminder that even those whose actions we see as evil are to be taken under our wing of compassion for all. These representations of fellow travelers and of loved ones remind us of the Dharma that each of them expressed in their lifetimes. And they make me reflect on how the actions and relationships in my life that I foster here and now are the everyday Dharma that I share with you all. Charlotte Joko Beck called it both nothing special and ordinary wonder, to remind us of the immediacy of our practice in the simple acts of our everyday lives. Nothing special in that there are none that deserve special privilege, each being equal and worthy of our attention and care. And in this ordinary state of being, we find wonder in all of our life's experiences. And so this is the Dharma we share with each other, the actions and interactions of our lives. And we need to consider a Sangha to be not just the people that show up here in the Zendo and on Zoom. Ultimately, the Sangha is everyone, every living being that we come into contact with every day. And we leave indelible, if subtle, marks in each other's lives in every moment. And that is a cause for great gratitude as we go about our daily business. To restate the obvious, our lives depend on all the many beings that make up this living planet, drawn from the Earth's elements, all the bodies of this solar system and beyond, all begin with the coming together of the matter and energy of this universe. We need no greater example of our interdependent nature than this, extending to even the small actions and interactions we experience every day. You don't need to sit on a throne to make some kind of impact in others' lives. Simply listening can be an act of great humility and a gift to the world, and therefore equally to ourselves. And where it is painful, we are there for it. As Charlie Brown might say, good grief. If you were here for Zach's Jukai ceremony a few days ago, you heard vows taken to follow the precepts, including the three refuges of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Zen masters through the ages teach that everything depends upon your vow. Tangen Harada Roshi says, "How alive, how vital is your aim, the aim with which you vow to live your life? If you're living your life with the vow to attain realization, all is lively. Your vow is dear, your purpose clear. Of course, this vow has to include all beings. Your promise is not a stingy one. There is no such thing as realization for one's personal benefit. As long as you are considering your own personal well-being first and foremost, how small, how lonely, weak, and ineffectual you are. But once you've made the commitment to attain realization, which necessarily includes all beings, your foundation is no longer self-centered. You no longer grasp this I, me, mine as your reason for being. Your vow is together with all beings. Here, right from the start, we find the conclusion of our journey, which is oneness with all beings. Without the I, there is no all beings. Without all beings, no I. There is no division, no separation, no duality in truth. The great vows and the benefit for all that we recite imply action, or at least they set orientation for us so that one's actions going forward are in sync with our intentions. We act, we live in a way that is consistent with our aspiration. That is what precepts are about. As we recite the benefit for all, we vow and aspire to love, to protect, to guide, and to act as refuge, as sanctuary. We serve. Rather than serve, some of our leaders have become quite adept at pitting ourselves against ourselves to serve themselves. They seek to turn us against each other when we all actually depend on each other, focusing on petty differences rather than a more profound shared identity. In reaching into a hot fire to pick up a burning coal to throw at another, we are both injured. Considered broadly, every action we take affects the whole of the larger Sangha, our living planet, and all its inhabitants. And that in itself is a political statement. We would do well to remember the doctor's Hippocratic oath to do no harm, even if it often seems to be forgotten in the realm of identity politics. If I am skillful with my words, and you are skillful in discerning them, there may be agreement, a common and helpful understanding. It requires some effort on both our parts for words to be effective. When I go to sit on my cushion at home, I will often hear the buzzing of leaf blowers or mowers, or the circular motion of the washing machine, and I have a choice. Do I give in to a rising sense of annoyance and frustration, or do I just consider the sound to be the voice of the Buddha chanting along with me, urging me to surrender all thought and to just be here, awake and alive with joy and appreciation for this existence? All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are sitting with you, praising your efforts, even if sometimes you wander off into the alleys of discursive thought. So a question that arises is, how can we take refuge in each other as Sangha, especially when we see so many unskillful actions taking place in the world? Shantideva tells us to see the difficult actors in our lives as supreme teachers, delivering lessons to us with insight into our limited views. When politicians spew their slick slander, can you look beyond the intention of their words and instead hear the sound of a Buddha testing our patience, egging us on to awakening? In our liturgy, we affirm that even if our enemies revile and persecute us, we should regard them as bodhisattva manifestations who, in their great compassion, are employing skillful means to free us. In Shantideva's epic poem, The Way of the Bodhisattva, he states that, because of those whose minds are full of anger, I engender patience in myself. They are thus the cause of patience, fit for veneration. Indeed, he says, the worlds of beings are a Buddha field. Shantideva inspires us in the way he turns our normal behavioral expectations on their ear, expressing gratitude even in our most difficult circumstances. I read a piece recently that described how we've lost touch with the power of the natural world. And the author stated that in many indigenous cultures, people would give names to individual trees, for example, recognizing the power of their inherent existence. So many times here we've spoken about how words cannot contain the essence of things, but they very much do have an impact on the ways we see things, dependent on the processes we use to assign meaning. They color the way we think about things, and once we assign a meaning to a word, it can become a milestone, a marker of the way we think about them going forward. We assign a certain value, and that can dictate the way we behave and act from then on. Our sister Gesho recently spoke about the power of words in this way, and we can see for ourselves how some, in positions of power, use them to influence our ways of thinking about people with certain characteristics or origins, and how these so-called leaders use poisonous rhetoric to revert our thinking to the dualistic them and us, rather than the one Sangha that we truly are. The Buddha reminds us that at a deep level, we must begin with ourselves to discover the truth through our own experience, relying on our own intuition and insight. We have the ability to see through our unskillful habits of mind, to place our orientation in a new, larger context. We are able to connect our own constellation of truths to act in this world in a courageous and compassionate way, just as the Buddha instructed in the Eightfold Noble Path. In Christian mystical traditions, the expression, the eye of the heart, is used to describe much the same truth. In Zen, we often see the Japanese word kokoro, or heart mind, to indicate the same. That in the course of discovering a wider context of meaning and value through our practice, we develop discernment, leading to right view and right action. This discernment is a skill that we hone into a sharper edge through experience and observation and questioning throughout our lives. And as we do, we develop a sense of gratitude for all the many beings, each playing their unique role, each discovering and creating their own destiny and helping to shape ours. Which is to say that we do not do this work alone. My father was a great inspiration and teacher to me in my early years, encouraging me to read and explore the breadth of human knowledge. He had a large collection of books, many focused on his love of history, but also great novels and books on nature and mythology. And those inspired my young mind and fostered my sense of curiosity about this world and about who we are and what we're doing here. These many years later, I have behind my desk, a bookcase that my father made with his own hands, packed with the knowledge of 100 wise and insightful authors. And so we teach each other by the example of our behaviors and in just being here together. We can choose to act compassionately. When we take a closer look at the precepts, in particular, the 10 grave precepts, we see that in order for them to guide us, we need a certain amount of discernment, which we begin to develop through the practice of Zazen, and then through bringing this practice off the cushion and into our everyday lives. We do the experiment, and we see the results. That is, in seeing both the immediate and longer-term results of our actions, we develop the sense of what it is that brings us into greater harmony with life, and what does not. In Zazen, we note the feelings associated with thoughts as they arise, and then return to focused attention. And beyond the cushion, we do the same with our words and actions. And in time, and with practice, we develop insight into our habits of mind, and bring clarity to our motivations and our relationships, and begin to redirect them in a more skillful way. So we are never locked into our past patterns and habits, no matter how deep-seated they may have become. Take the example of Angulimala from the ancient Pali Canon. It is said that in the Buddha's time, Angulimala was a feared and murderous criminal who wore a gruesome necklace containing a finger from each of his many victims. His transformation began when he encountered the Buddha, who taught him compassion and the possibility of redemption, leading him to abandon his violent ways, to atone, and to eventually become a monk. In the Majjhima Nikaya, it is written about him that, "Who once was heedless, but later is not, brightens the world like the moon set free from a cloud." And the once murderous Angulimala is finally able to say, "I am rid of craving, free of grasping. My sense doors are guarded and well restrained. I have destroyed the root of misery and attained the ending of defilements." We can think of our past unskillful actions as like the necklace of fingers around Angulimala's neck. Our gruesome deeds are on display for each of us to see, in the ways that they have shaped us and in our false perceptions of who we are. Angulimala's experience with the Buddha allowed him the insight to see into his past deeds and to let them go. But what we can learn from this is that you can be forgiven no matter your past damaging actions, and that we always have the possibility of starting anew, to take off the necklace of shame and to forgive ourselves for those past actions. Tuere Sala of the Seattle IMS Center writes, "I think this is what meditation brings to the human condition. I see it in retreats over and over. There's 100 people in a room. You may know one or two of them at the start of the retreat. Most people don't know anyone, although they may have seen people at other retreats. By the end of the retreat, however, you feel as though you've spent a week with some of your closest friends. This is the intimacy of silence. Silence allows hearts to begin to resonate at the same frequency as love. Sangha is where we share and cultivate an intimacy with silence. Moreover, Sangha is about cultivating the inner weaving of dana, or generosity, in our practice. Often we think of dana in relation to financial support, because that's the way we talk about supporting teachers and retreat centers. Dana itself is way more than that. Dana is a necessary foundation for resilience. It is the understanding that we are all interconnected with each other. We are bound together and need each other to survive. The human condition thrives off giving and receiving. There is caregiving on both sides, so we take care of each other. Buddha took this reality and tied it with the word freely. So it's not just giving and receiving, it's freely giving, freely receiving. This is at the heart of what it means to be in community. Ideas of inclusivity and belonging are woven into the nature of dana and sangha." When our brother Donan spoke last week about change, he mentioned that the Chinese ideogram for the word crisis was composed of two characters, one meaning danger, the other opportunity. And this is what confronts us in each moment. We have the ability to see clearly the paths of danger and opportunity. And as we develop discernment, we are better prepared to choose more skillful paths. With this practice of Zazen, we mature into being able to discern the differences. We can restrain ourselves when our instinct is to speak or act in a defensive or hurtful manner. We can choose to help another when we see the opportunity to make a positive difference. We may not always get it right, but we can only learn when we have open eyes and open hearts. John Lennon Buddha called this path of learning instant karma. Let's open our hearts and see what happens.